So is this recording?
Yeah, we're recording. You're going to hear yourself.
It's going to air.
Yeah.
Is it actually?
Possibly.
Shit.
What did you have for breakfast?
A bit personal.
Yeah, very personal.
Hard question. I had half a bacon and egg and cheese sandwich that my girlfriend made for me.
Okay.
Lucky man.
I had McDonald's, everyone.
He did?
I did.
Well, ooh, I caught him, so we had to go down to the shops together, and I actually caught him. I busted him at McDonald's.
To be fair, I did. I walked up and down Sydney Road. I was looking for a cafe. Mm. I couldn't find one. There were just hipsters, you know, falling out into footpaths.
Vegans fucking everywhere.
I didn't want to be crammed into a place. I wanted something, you know. Yeah. I saw McDonald's. It was a shining light.
What did you get from McDonald's?
I got one of the big brekkie burgers.
What's the name of your podcast? The Uncommon Podcast.
The Uncommon Podcast!
This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Neural Media is an effortless and affordable content production service. We help businesses save time and money by taking away the pain of producing content. If you want to grow your audience through content production, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Create a quote and request a callback from me personally. If you want to learn more about the benefits of growing your audience, download our free series on how to create content at the bottom of neural.com/media. Listeners to this podcast receive a special 10% discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. Welcome to Uncommon, the podcast that helps you build your knowledge, skills, and mindset through interviews with unique individuals. My name is Jordan Michaelides, the CEO of Neural Media and your host. In this episode, I have for you Seb and Mark, who are the co-creators of the satirical cartoon brand Stepmates. Along with composer and sound engineer Peter Corrigan, these champions of lowbrow, bottom-of-the-barrel humor, as they call it, are creating hilariously animated satire. Now, what I love about the Stepmates boys is that, like comedians such as Friendly Geordies, they're able to cut through the bullshit we see around us, reducing an oftentimes critically overthought topic to a key statement or point. And in a world where being politically moderate is somehow radical, these two gentlemen are able to sound out what we're all really thinking with just a brilliant, simple animation. And this is often giving a shining light to a world that is slowly eating itself due to poor political discourse. This was an incredibly funny episode where we covered Friendly Geordies and breaking down PC bullshit, No Nut November and productivity, what they wanted to be growing up, the Stepmates business, moving into animation and their creative process, the Jim's mowing drama, which is quite funny, life-changing moments, viral videos, and being politically centrist. I think, like the previous episodes for the last few weeks, this would be brilliant for anyone who enjoys comedy, but particularly satire. So if you've got a friend that likes this sort of stuff or likes Stepmates, do share it with them. Or if you like it yourself, do consider subscribing on your podcast app. If you want something similar, then consider looking at an episode with Friendly Geordies, episode 63, where we spoke about the importance of being rational. If you want the show notes to any episodes, including this one, you can just head to the index. That's at neural.com/podcast, which is neural.com/podcast. But as I say each week, thank you so much for listening, our regulars for coming back, our newbies for giving us a shot. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Seb and Mark of Stepmates. And we're live.
Holy shit, it's happened.
Here we are.
We're all together.
Creating animated chaos, I think it is, right? Yeah. Creating animated chaos.
Seb wrote that.
Yeah, that's our little Patreon tagline.
What does that mean?
I just stole it from the Friendly Geordies.
Did you really?
They said just creating chaos. I was like, that's cool.
Oh, nice.
Well, you create like animated chaos. Yeah.
That's awesome. I've interviewed Jordan. He's a great guy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
What's he like in real life?
Awesome. He's exceptionally intelligent.
Yeah.
Loves a good yarn. Loves anything related to the culture wars at the moment.
Yeah.
And he's currently in Turkmenistan.
Yeah, right.
I felt like that was just a weird, you know he does like weird geo, you know, when you're in Instagram where you can say where you're from, you can tag where you're from. I thought that was just a joke.
Really?
I had no idea that he was actually over there.
Well, I would be more surprised if he wasn't there because yeah, he's right. The type of guy that would go there.
Yeah.
Yeah, would make sense.
His Vice stuff. His Vice stuff was so good. Did you watch that?
No. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. All his, yeah, mate. I watch Geordie and freak out at how fucking clever he is and how fucking good it is. Compared to what we do, which is just lowest common denominator sort of shit. His is so high end and so high brow, but it's done so beautifully. A lot of admiration for that man.
But I find that with your stuff though, it is very, like, you're doing the same thing, but it's just a little less highbrow. Like, you're saying the same thing.
that's an extraordinary compliment. A little less highbrow. It's the bottom of the barrel.
But like your analysis is brilliant. Like, it's the same stuff that all these intimate comedians and most comedians are great at. You know, we were talking about Jordan Peterson before. I think that comedians, cartoonists, satirists, anyone who does this form of analysis is brilliant at just sort of breaking down bullshit.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Yeah, we like it too. Because there's too much bullshit out there at the moment. Everything's too fucking forethought. Everything has to be so specific. We like just being able to just throw it out there in the first way it goes out.
Well, there's these vloggers in LA, these young vloggers. They're probably like 20, 22 years of age. And there's one guy's name, Brendan Cavillo, I think it is. And he had this bit recently where it was like a 50-second clip and it's like the world, family life in 2050. And it is brilliant. It's like the child's like, hi, non-gender specific parent. Specific child. Like just, and then it's one of those things, we'll link it and you've got to watch, but it is so on point. And most of the comments are like, this is life right now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have you heard about like Baba Black Sheep got changed to Baba Rainbow Sheep?
No.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
When was it?
You heard about this? You read about this?
No.
It's true. Yeah, apparently, yeah. Kids are fucking learning it, you know. Just because it's a black sheep doesn't mean it's not equal and all that sort of shit. You can't fucking, let's not pick out the black sheep, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, mental.
Wow.
Bar, rainbow sheep. Doesn't even make sense. Where's the alliteration?
What do you reckon, where do you guys reckon this shit comes from? I have a viewpoint that it's a combination of the economics that's happened since 2008, but also we haven't really had any wars or anything shit happen on Earth.
Yeah,
we're
just looking
years.
For a fucking
people
problem.
Getting itchy. Yeah, yeah.
When I watched a video, it was earlier today. It was about people watching fucking Seinfeld and getting offended.
H3H3,
right? Yeah, and I was like, fuck, like that is mental.
It's like jokes could just go right over people.
Over them, yeah.
Like the whole point on that video was, you know, kids were. What was it? It was like, is this okay? Does it get a pass or something like that?
Yeah.
Does it hold up?
Does it hold
does
up?
Does this
yeah.
hold up?
Yeah.
I was like, it's fucking Seinfeld. Of course it does.
But it's sort of that generation. They're like indoctrinated into it. It's normal for them. Whereas like our generation is sort of like, you know, people have sort of learnt this sort of, what do you call it? Cultural Marxism sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Sort of they find themselves like, you know, having to have these set of rules that they apply to certain situations, whereas for these kids, it's like a second sense. You know?
Yeah. See, I think it actually stems from a really good place as well.
Like, oh, yeah.
It actually comes from
mainstream,
a bigger sense of empathy.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is so empathetic at this point. Like, we're all so worried about everybody else on the planet, right? So, it all stems from a really good place. These people that are getting offended on other people's behalf, it actually does come from a nice place where it's just like, oh, imagine if I was this person, how offended I would be. But really what it is it's just it fucks everyone else.
It's sort of showboating a little bit, I think. It's like, oh, look how morally virtuous I am.
Yeah, look how empathetic I am.
Yeah, I'm more empathetic than you
their
are.
Putting shoes on, all that sort of shit.
Yeah. Well, I think Jordan Peterson's argument is that it's laced in this whole idea of empathy, but really it's a form of power.
Yeah.
Which I mean, he's, you know, talking specifically about things like, what was it, that pronoun legislation
in
Canada.
Yeah.
But I think he was talking generally as well about what's happening with this stuff. But it's super fascinating. I love having those guys on, all those comedians, to talk about this and their analysis of it. It's so good.
Well, you're not going to get that out of us. You're not going to get deep analysis. You're
fucking lowbrow.
Fucked cunts. That's all you're going to get. Who have you interviewed? You've interviewed some big names, right? What's your top three?
Top three.
Are you Tom Ballard?
Yeah, I interviewed Tom Ballard, but
not top three though.
Tom Ballard was interesting because it made me realize how much like internet comedians have of a following.
Yeah,
like I'm absolutely certain that this interview will do better than someone who sort of comes from the mainstream.
So this will do better than Ballard,
I reckon.
Fuck yes. Fuck yeah! Because fuck you, Ballard. Eat a dick.
Because they're personas, right?
Yeah, they're
not, you know, they don't have genuine communities and followings. Like Friendly Geordies. Friendly Geordies is the most popular episode. Both of his episodes are the most popular episode we've had.
Yeah. No, it does not surprise me.
And yeah, it's one of those things where people who have genuine followings through the internet have people that come to you. But who are the top ones? It's really hard, dude.
You've got like a lot of like professional people, right? You've got like invented Bitcoin, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. Like you've got all these kinds of fucking lining up. Like
we've got like three areas. It's sort of like business and tech, politics and culture, and then health and sport.
Right.
And
wait, where do we fit in?
Where the fuck do we fit in?
I'd say politics and culture.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But who are the top three? I don't know. Like, I mean, it was kind of nice interviewing Jeff Kennett, just simply because my family are like Greek liberal Democrat types that love the Liberal Party, and like Jeff Kennett was a god to them, and it just sort of made me realize that he's just an ordinary grumpy old man.
Yeah. That would have been fucking fascinating to get around.
He's the only one I've genuinely been nervous for, just because he was a bit of a prick at the start.
Yeah.
But
that's his persona.
But that's him. I respect that. I like him for it.
We've thought about doing guests. We've sort of been throwing the idea around.
I think
it'd
be interesting to riff on ideas and sort of help you expand the cartoons that you're doing and come up with new ideas. Like, you know, I want to get into how does that creative process work, but I really think that for you guys it'd be fun because I love listening to your stuff. It's just good old banter.
Thanks, mate.
It's good.
We're pretty crispy most of the time.
What was the reason why? Master Debater.
Masturbators. Yeah. Well, yeah, so Sebi's just stopped. Sebi's just started masturbating again after a month off. So we really needed to highlight that.
What was the NoFap November?
No Nut November,
November.
I did it as a dare, basically, on the podcast.
That's the best thing is when you've got the microphones on and you throw something out like that, like a challenge, lay it down. The big fella has to do it.
You have to do it.
But I've had this thing in November where I've tried to not go for comfort. You know, I've been notorious for, you know, procrastinating on my phone. Wanking is a great form of procrastination.
It's a great form.
What else is there?
Procrastination, like, is what you call it.
Chilling on your phone is one that I've mentioned
before. I'm a big video game guy. I'll just get lost in video games for hours.
So I've tried doing less of that because I've noticed, and the phone has been, I've completely changed the way I use my phone because, you know, I was terrible at that shit. I reckon I was addicted to Instagram about a week ago until I deleted it off my phone and realized how much I would go to look at the fucking thing.
What's it called? Screen time thing change that for you?
Yeah.
That was the thing?
Yeah.
See, I smashed screen time because I smashed my phone and it was ghosting, so it was doing all fucking things by itself.
Yeah.
And my screen time was down to like 12 minutes.
Mine at the moment is about 12 minutes a day.
Yeah. It was something like that. Because I physically couldn't use my fucking phone. I don't even know how I got 12 minutes worth of it. I think it was 12 minutes just from me checking the time, because that's about all it fucking became.
Yeah.
It was just like a pocket watch.
Giant watch. What do you reckon it is now for you?
Do you want to have a look?
Yeah.
Probably 10 hours. I fucking love it. I fall into holes.
Yeah, because...
How do I find it?
Mine was low in November, and then I think in December I would have crept up a little bit.
So mine today is already at... 1 hour and 56 minutes. But that would have been because I was looking at it at probably 12:30 last night. But so I looked at this article. It's about an hour read. Lauren, who's probably listening to this in hindsight, will be able to link it. It's better something. betterhumans.coach.me. It's this guy's blog on Medium. It's an hour and 15-minute read. It's a decent read.
Yeah.
This guy goes through everything in terms of priority of making your phone productive. And the biggest change that you can make, the number one change, which I want to find,
is
turning off all notifications.
Yeah.
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 That's been the biggest thing for me is my phone now just never harasses me. And so it doesn't interrupt my workflow. So I get so much more done, at least in the last week. I've just done that for the last week.
Even on messages?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, so right. I know people who would message me regularly, I've just told them like, I only check my messages a few times a day. If you need me, call me.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So
that's great.
My phone, because I work in sort of sales and, you know, outward bound stuff, I need to need to be available on my phone. But if I don't recognize the number, I don't answer it. It can go to voicemail.
Yeah. Nice. And if they don't leave a voicemail, they're not important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I hate people who don't leave fucking voicemails.
I know.
Unless yeah. I know them.
I like screening those cunts.
My parents are notorious at this. They'll call a few times. It's like, leave me a voicemail so I know how important this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, on a scale of one to like, holy shit.
Is grandma in hospital?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, with all this, I like to get an idea of the guests and who they are and sort of what makes them, I guess.
Right.
And just sort of get an idea of, you know, what sort of inspired them to do what they do. And one thing I like learning about is, what did you guys think you were going to be when you were kids? Like, what job did you think you were going to do?
Well, I wanted to be a lawyer. Like, okay. Beyond anything else, that's all I wanted to be. And I remember telling my nan that as well. And I was like, I want to be a fucking lawyer. Nan, and she was like, oh, you're probably a bit fucking dumb, mate. Like, and I was like, and from that was probably 8 years old. I was 8 years old, and I was like, I want to be a fucking lawyer. Where I got that idea from?
How did that sort of crystallize in your head? You watched Law and Order?
I have no idea. I have no idea why I wanted to be a lawyer. I think I liked the idea of money.
Okay.
That was the thing. I think I really liked the idea of money. But then I also remember telling my nan that I wanted to do I wanted to be an actor as well. Because okay. I fucking loved that. And I loved Jim Carrey and shit growing up.
So it was always going to be something sort of extroverted.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I wasn't that much of an extrovert as a kid, I think I always just wanted to be one when I was older as well. So maybe that's what it was. Growing up, I always wanted to be an extrovert.
Yeah. What about you, Seb?
I wanted to be a jet pilot.
I was like, nightmare. I was like. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was like, had a plan. It was join the Air Force, become a jet pilot.
Yeah. What stopped you?
Don't know. I think it was like finishing year 12 and then having to pick a uni and like I had to pick some sort of direction.
Yeah, right.
And like our career counselors were like the worst.
Oh,
ever.
Don't they get me started. So on bad. That. They told me to go to fucking ACU, Australian Catholic Uni.
Fuck no.
On the basis that I could transfer into Monash because I just missed out on Monash by like a point or something like that. Because I wanted to do commerce.
Yeah.
And fuck, that did not happen.
Yeah.
Like, for a start, the units that they had in like the first year at ACU were shit. Like they had like a sort of philosophy class, like a theology class dressed in philosophy.
Right.
So it was like theological philosophy. So they tried to put in like spiritual elements, but
fuck that.
Like the class was like philosophy 101. But I was like, why is this part of a business course? This is maybe if I did like a double arts degree, sure. Anyway, I didn't get into Monash. I went to Swinburne. Moral of the story is don't, and this is for your 15-year-old audience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't listen to your fucking career counsellors.
No, we've already pumped that out. Don't fucking listen to them.
But I was just one of the kids they sort of brushed off. Like, you know, oh, we'll go to the, like the high-achieving kids. Like, we'll help them out. And it's like, oh, fuck, Seb's in here. Like, I don't know, just go to film school or something, you idiot.
Mine is cool because I ended up doing law.
I went to Monash Law School,
right? But when I was in year 11, I went and spoke to the career counsellor as well. And she was just like, you're probably not going to get into law, mate. Like, this is a back of smash school, you fucking idiot. Like, you're not going to get in, mate. You're not going to get in. Why? Back then, I really wanted to go to Melbourne Uni. So okay. It was like Melbourne Uni Law School was the one. And they tried to push me onto ACU as well. And I was like, fuck that noise. No way.
It's funny you mentioned jet pilot because I remember I was... Before I met, Lauren and I met when I was about 18. So that sort of screwed that idea up. But I thought I was going to do the same thing. I love the idea of going into like the army or the air force and having a degree paid for.
Yeah.
As well as getting paid 40, 50K a year. I thought this is too good to be true.
You were a born commerce kid. Yeah. You were fucking, how can I get some other cunt to pay me to do something?
See, I'd want to do that, but I just would never want to go to war. Like I'd happily be in the army, but as long as it was just training.
I've always been obsessed with war and history of war and stuff like that. But I've always, I've sort of been in the same thing. I don't want to have direct, maybe I'd work in intelligence. That's sort of, you know, like when you watch war movies and you go, what would I do if it was World War II? And you had to, like you're enlisted or something.
I'd be like the furthest guy back pressing the buttons.
I'd be deep in the trenches, but not fighting. That's the thing. So I'm confrontational. Yeah, I'd be the guy in the fucking trench just rolling darts for every bloke, talking about what happened on the field. It's like, and making jokes, having a fucking laugh, trying to make everything just a bit smoothed over.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Those Japs.
How the fucking Japs, eh? They're fired up. Fuck. Not a bad aim for little eyes.
Do you reckon we'll see another war?
I hope so. I fucking love it. No, seriously, because Chaplin killed it during wartime. Like, he fucking annihilated it.
Chaplin or Churchill?
Chaplin.
Chaplin.
Chaplin fucking, he was so good. Like, oh, he was doing
Charlie
like,
Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin. So he was murdering, like, when he was doing all his fucking, like, the Great Nazi Dictator stuff. He did the Great Dictator. Wartime's great because it's so sad.
It's good for comedy.
But it gives so much room for comedy. Like, it's so good. I can't wait for the war. I want to start the next war.
Look, I think it's, humans always sort of fall into their tribe, so I think it's inevitable.
Yeah.
But a world war, it's hard, isn't it? Hard to know, but I feel like we've been through without a war for like 80 years. It's sort of bound to happen.
I agree with you. Yeah. I agree.
People are getting itchy.
I agree with you, Jordan. If we get anything out of this podcast, it's been too long since the last war.
People are sort of forgetting about things like the Holocaust and shit like that.
I know.
I just read the Gulag Archipelago.
I bought it. Where is it? Somewhere here. I just bought all those fucking books. I'm three down.
Yeah.
Because I buy them in batches.
Yeah. It's
got
a heavy...
So the ones on the top, I've got Ray Dalio's Principles, Innovator's Solution, Code Book. That's sort of like a war intelligence codes type book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very on topic. Where is it? Gulag Archipelago. It's there somewhere.
Yeah,
right. You've got some literature up there, mate. Jesus Christ.
I read for about an hour a day.
Where's the fucking Harry Potters? And,
Lord of the Rings.
Where's the latest Guinness Book of World Records?
It's all with my brother. My brother, he was the one who actually bought the books, and I borrowed all the Harry Potter books and all the Lord of Rings books from him.
Yeah.
You know, my partner, she's not seen any of Lord of the Rings or the original Star Wars. I know.
Roberts! Get her onto it. Nah, look, Lord of the Rings, I understand. That's a fucking tough watch if you're not into it.
Really?
Yeah, I can't. I've tried seven times.
You're not a fantasy guy, are you?
No. Was it? Sig.
Sig.
What did you say? You're not a fan of what?
You're not a fantasy guy.
No, sorry. I thought you said you're not a fan of Sig Eyes.
Oh, no.
I thought this was some sort of fantasy word. Yeah, no, I don't like fantasy. For some reason, I need some sort of grounding. Harry Potter, I can understand because he started in the real world and then he went off to like magic school.
Yeah.
That's cool. I fucking get that. I'm there. Drag me in. But Lord of the Rings, it starts in this fucking imaginal world. Fuck no.
Yeah, it's a bit intense.
Yeah, it's too much. And it's like, oh, there's you fucking. I don't know. What are the creatures in there? Like
the orcs.
Yeah, orcs and shit. Hobbits. Not into it. I've tried seven times to watch the first one. Can't get through it. Had a crack at The Hobbit. That was maybe eight stories in one. It just kept on going like, oh, and then he gets to this point. There's a battle.
Are you talking about the book or the movie?
The movie.
So you couldn't get through the first movie?
No, I can't even get through the first movie. Yeah, I know. This is how baseline fantasy I am. I can't even do that.
How do you feel about this, Seb?
I'm a massive fan. I've just given up on him now.
Yeah,
you're not a Star Wars fan either.
Nah, fuck, I fall asleep in all the Star Wars.
Jesus.
Well. Even though that one, I get it. I watched it as a kid. I get it. It was fucking cool. But it's just, it's too complex. Like, I like space. Don't get me wrong. But,
I love the hero's journey type stories. Yeah. Like those big,
but
epic.
I feel like the latest ones are less like that. The latest ones, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the latest ones.
The latest Star Wars.
And I think that's going to be the next reason why we have a world war. Because there's two groups of people, right? There's people that like fucking like the new Star Wars. And
people that hate it.
That fucking hate it. And I'm on the other side.
Now, you mentioned before about Bacchus Marsh.
Yes.
Is that where you grew up?
Yes. Well, Melton, really.
Did you guys grow up together?
No, I grew up in Ballarat. So we're both on the same side of the...
But both in sort of the...
The western West suburbs, mate. We are from the western suburbs. Yeah. Yep.
Now, what...
The Wild Wild West, we call it.
How did you two meet?
We met through... Because you were going to law school.
Yep.
And I had moved into a share house in Melbourne to come down and study film school. And in that share house were a couple of my mates from Ballarat who are also studying law at Monash.
Mm.
So, I think I just met you sort of through them.
It was a house called The Brotherhood, which was... And it was its nickname, the Brotherhood of Iris, because it was in Glen Iris. And so, it was really close to...
Hang on a sec.
What?
Is this near a train line?
Yeah. Right near...
Is it a real dump?
Yeah. It's fucking awful.
Do you know Michael Crinnell?
Michael Crinnell?
No.
I reckon my mate lived in that house.
Maybe.
Because it was a real dump, yeah? And like the all the rooms, sort of some of the rooms had separate locks on the doors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same house.
It's the fucking same house. Michael Crinnell, what year would that have been?
He just came back from Dublin, so he's living in Dublin for 2 years, so maybe 2015 or 16.
He could have lived in it after we did.
Maybe. We abandoned the place.
Is there like a nanny flat out the back as well?
No.
Like a sort of portable?
No.
Maybe it's a different joint. Maybe it's another dump in Iris.
Oh, maybe he's in Glen Iris City Council's the council. So there's Glen Iris.
No, we were Stonington. It was Stonington Council. We know because we got plenty of fucking letters from him.
Oh my god! I want to fucking ask him like mid-interview. Hey mate, where did you used to live? Because yeah, I feel like it's the same place.
It could be.
What was the house name of your house?
How many rooms did it have?
Six something bedrooms, like that. I think. Oh, so it was basically like a frat house. Like, yeah. It was mental. So it was the go-to dump for all of the law school elites to go and feel what it was like to be living amongst the common man.
Okay.
And the western suburbs.
Yeah, all the western suburbs. And that's how Sebby and I met, is that I decided to...
We met at a law ball, actually. I was crushing the law ball.
Yes, which is one of the most prestigious of all events for the law school community was the annual law ball.
I'd say in Victoria, it's probably the best. You've got the engineers ball, the law ball.
The Commerce Ball at Monash used to go off its head as well.
Yeah. Yep. Commerce at Melbourne's pretty good. My brother used to run the student. He was the treasurer at the student union at Melbourne.
Nice.
And they had a pretty big ball, but the Monash ones were like off the charts.
Yeah, I went to like five of them.
Yeah. Sebby went to more than some law students did.
I did.
Every single one. But Sebby and I actually got into a, it sounds weird, but we got into a fight together. With someone else,
like a fisticuff.
Yeah, we were out at the smoking area, smashing a dart together, just meeting each other, and then we were setting these like face masks on fire, like it was like one of those, what is it, like a masquerade party?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the vibe, and we're just setting this fucking thing on fire, and this guy came up and was like, "Oh, that's my girlfriend's mask." Like, we don't give a fuck. What are you talking about? And yeah, we got in this fight together, and we just ended up like poking and prodding this cunt. And it was like, then I was like. I reckon we could be mates.
This is a good team.
We both got the same sentiment.
Yeah.
We both just want to fuck with people.
you thugs.
And it turned out he was fucking with us. That's the other thing, is that we fucked with him so much that it was very evident that he didn't have a girlfriend.
Right.
That was how we broke it down. It was like, that's my girlfriend's mask. And it was like, well, fuck.
Where is she?
If you do have a girlfriend, like, we'll go get her another mask, I promise you, because
we'll buy her another one.
We'll buy her another one because she needs it, mate.
And so where did things go from there? Like, you know, give me the timeline from the fucking fisticuffs at the Monash ball to doing the first cartoon for Stepmates.
Well, that's a tough one. So the first, like, Seb and I, we were living together, and it was sort of one of those, you know, there was just a weird house, like lots of drinking, lots of partying, lots of fucking around. And it was probably towards the end of my law degree, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I was getting into the acting side of life as well. So I'd done the Monash Law Review.
Yeah.
And from that, I ended up getting an opportunity to write a pilot with a guy called Steve Vizard, who used to host a Tonight Show.
Yeah.
So Steve Vizard found me and a bunch of other guys, and we're like, let's write a pilot together. So we fucking...
Really?
That was it. I abandoned law.
Fuck.
It was like, not not fucking becoming a lawyer anymore. I'm going to pursue this acting thing, even though that had never been on the cards. And then did the pilot. We ended up getting funding for that, and then we started shopping it around to Channel 9 and whatever. In the interim, Sebby and I were just fucking around. Like, we found some teddy bears in from one of our housemates as well, and we just decided to do this little short fucking film, just filmed on the iPhone. And it was two teddy bears, like, walking through the house, and it was like one of the teddy bears comes out of the toilet and like looks at the other one, and they both had like creepy faces on it. And then we ended up making them, of course, fuck each other. And then we finished it off with like a cum shot, but with fluff going all over the all over the faces. And it was like we edited it up, and it was really fun, and like we just like, that is fucking awesome. Like, maybe we should just keep doing more of those. But we ended up getting in a lot of trouble for doing that from one of our housemates who was a little sensitive about the...
Why?
He was very attached to the bears.
Who gives a fuck?
He had a dialogue with the bears. He was like, is that what the bears want to do? And he ended up taking it to the room and talking it through. He's like, I'm so sorry what they did to you today. All this sort of shit. The bear that got the cum shot. The other one he didn't give a fuck about. Like, he was just like, he let his fluff out. It's all good. So... And anyway, so we did this. I did this pilot with these guys called Will and Woody, who are now on Kiss FM. So we did this pilot together, and we ended up making a big strategic fuck up, which was we tried to pitch it to two different networks at the same time, both telling them that they had exclusive rights to it, even though Channel 10 at the time had paid for it. So they deserved exclusivity, but we took it to Channel 9, and we ended up having some serious meetings with Channel 9. And it was a live sketch comedy show, right? So it's an expensive thing. They were talking about like a budget of $2 million an episode.
Fuck.
And we were like, we were this fucking close. We were talking about wages. Like, wages for me was going to be like 20 grand a week as a writer, whoa, creator, performer, everything, and plus back end. So we were fucking fired up, ready to go. It all fucking collapsed slowly.
Why?
And then because we started Stepmates.
The thing between...
Yeah, so we just, both networks decided to say, fuck you then.
Why? Because they
found
out. So
Channel 9 said no more, and then we went back to Channel 10, and Channel 10 said, well, I heard you went to Channel 9, fuck Stiggs. And this is all Steve's master plan was we're going to start a bidding war, but when both bidders decided to retract the paddle, no one bought it anymore. Yeah. So I developed a pretty sturdy and strong drug addiction because I'd also done an ad at the time. So I becoming an actor with this talent agency, I ended up picking up a Commonwealth Bank ad. So it was about 3 weeks worth of work, and I made 80K. Like, it was a lot of money. Like, everyone was like, you've just hit the jackpot. And I was like, fuck off. This acting thing's easy. And like, they sent me over to London to do some stuff for the Olympics. So this is 2012.
Wow.
So I came back, put most of that 80K up my nose, or smoked most of it. So I had a pretty bad drug addiction. And then I was turning a corner, because as the pilot stuff was falling apart, so was I. And so was my life's direction. Like, I didn't want to go into law. I'd had a taste of this acting thing, really liked the creative side of life. And so me, Seb, Will and Woody, we started Stepmates.
Wow.
And that's how it all began.
And this was in 2012.
2013
we started.
Was it really?
August.
So it was
August
5th. Back end of 2012. So, and I actually physically, you might remember this story as well, because I was like borderline like suicidal. That's really how bad I was. So like, I was, coming off the drugs. I'd just coming out of a breakup as well. And the pilot had fallen apart. I had no more acting opportunities, and we started Stepmates, and we were doing sketches together. Like, we were filming sketches. We bought a camera. And then these guys decided that it was Stepmates that was going to be the thing to bring me out of the muck.
Yeah. I remember having a chat with Will and Woody, about, because you were having a bad time, and we'd filmed sort of 3 or 4 sketches, and we were like, we're gonna back up like 10.
Mm.
But like, you were having such a bad time, it's like, fellas, I think we should just release them and let's keep making them, because I think that helped. Like, I think that
it legitimately gave me something to focus on.
Yeah.
Something other than drugs. And it gave me some drive to, and I look back at it now and think it was some of the most productive and fun times I've ever had.
Yeah, it was the very start funny of those days. Was writing those first little sketches and
dumb shit. And then we launched, and it all went really well. So our first sketch got like 10,000 views, which was massive for us coming from zero.
So hang on, this is the first cartoon.
No. So this is the first. So we did started with live action sketches.
Yeah, we haven't touched animation yet.
Which we've deleted since.
Live action sketches. So you were recording it live on Facebook or whatever?
No. So they were just film sketches.
Okay.
So we did this one about the Essendon Football Club, because it was the whole drug saga at the time. Yeah. And I was really fat too. I was 135 kilos back then. So I was massive. And we had a really skinny guy that we knew, like super duper skinny, like almost ill looking. And what we did was we did a little camera trick where it was like, after the injection, I went from 135 kilos down to his fucking 30 kilos, and it went bananas. Like, well, bananas for us at the time anyway, which was, it got 10,000 views on YouTube, and that was from zero subscribers. So we were like, we're fucking onto this. Like, we had 1,000 likes on Facebook really quickly. And we were like, this is a path for us.
And when did the cartoon start? So 2012 was when Stepmates started.
2013 was when we released. That would have been like 2 years later, I think.
So we were doing a lot of film stuff. So we had a crack at the sketch stuff. Will and Woody, who were our co-partners in the whole thing, we bought a camera with those guys. They paid for a camera for us so that we could do it, because they were working at Fox FM at the time. So they were doing a bit of radio.
Mm.
They bought a camera for us, essentially. We chipped in a little bit. I think I bought a lens. And then they got an opportunity to go over to Perth to do morning brekkie radio over there for like the version of Fox over there. Right?
Okay.
On Who Gives a Fuck FM or whatever in Perth, right? And so they went over there and did that. So they left us standing there with our dicks in our hands going like, well, fuck, like, now
we're just
two of us, right? Yeah.
One guy in front of the camera, one guy behind. It's like, how do we make stuff?
And it was shit. So we ended up picking up some weird work. We produced a show for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival for Scott Dooley.
Yes.
Yeah, so Scott Dooley, who is a Scott Dooley. He's a cunt.
He wasn't nice to work for.
So we fucking killed it for him, right? We sold out his show. He only wanted, it was like, we had like a 3 or 4 week lead up to the show. We sold out his fucking show, which was mental, like physically handing out flyers, fucking wheat pasting posters everywhere. We did this whole thing like fucking bootleg. We had no experience in this shit. We booked it out. He sold out his first week. He was really happy. Then he got offered by the Melbourne International Comedy Festival to do another week, and he expected us to be able to sell out another week in like a weekend. And then when no one turned up to his first show, was like, guys, what's going on? Like,
yeah,
the first show of that week.
Yeah, the next week. So he finished on the Friday, got the offer on the Friday, and he was like, do you reckon we can sell out next week over the weekend during the festival? We're like, it can be done, Blake. And then we didn't, obviously. I think we had 12 people in the room. No, because
everyone that wanted to come had come.
Had already fucking come, right?
You got him in the door.
I'm fucking Scott Dooley. I was on Nova. And I was like, can't, no one gives a fuck, right?
Wow.
But the story, the reason why we did that was we filmed one of his days. We did Mad As Friday, whatever the fuck it is.
Triple J
where he was there doing some stand-up or whatever the fuck he was doing. And so we took our camera, Canon 5D Mark II, whatever it was. It was fucking awesome. And we left it on top of the car. And we reversed out of the car park and we left it there. Like, it just fell off the back of the car. Legitimately lost our camera.
Oh, my God.
Which means we lost every asset that we had for the whole thing. And we didn't realize until 3 weeks later when we decided to, because we'd been doing all these long form sketches, but Will and Woody had gone, so we didn't really have a cast. It was just me now and Sebi behind the camera, so we didn't have a cast anymore. We had no friends because no one liked us anymore because we started Stepmates and they weren't invited. So we had no mates. We had no co-cast.
No camera.
And now no camera. And the only reason we worked it out was because 3 weeks later we went, nah, fuck it. Let's do Stepmates. Let's do more Stepmates. Stepmates is going to get us out of this shit. It's done it before, you know. I didn't kill myself last time. Let's do it again. And so we decided to shoot like a new profile pic. We'll start with a new profile pic and the sketches will start coming from there. And then, yeah, Sebi was like, I'm just going to get the camera out of the car. And I was like, can't, I don't think it's in the car. And he's like walking up and down the house trying to find the camera. And we were just like, oh, where the fuck is it? Where the fuck? It must be here somewhere. It must be here somewhere. And then it clicked.
I can't get over the camera. So 5D was it?
It was a 5D Mark II.
It was like $3,000. And we had awesome lenses.
It was two lenses, yeah.
We had excellent stuff. Like, we had all the gear there. So we lost everything.
So it was in the bag.
It was in a hard case, and we just I'm blaming Sebi. Sebi put it on top of the car.
No, well,
and then when we reversed out, I actually physically remember coming out of the car park going, huh, when I reversed out and just hearing like a boom. I'm like, huh.
But we just finished for Scott, and we're like, let's just get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, this is the last thing we had to do for the car. We're like, fuck this guy. We're not doing this ever again.
So you didn't go back and ask the car park or anything like that?
No, because it was 3 weeks later when we realized we didn't have the camera.
Oh, no.
Do you know what I mean? We didn't realize it at the time that we didn't have the camera. So, blessing in disguise, though, we decided to shoot stuff on iPhones. And that's where we learnt the trade of doing really short stuff. So then we did, we had our first viral hit with What It's Really Like Being Single, where Sebi edited together, like, you know, that was the title of the thing, and then it was people making out, people partying, people having sex and whatever, and then it cut to me in bed wanking, watching that particular video. It went bananas, like millions. It was one of the fucking coolest things in the world, was watching a video, like, you're scrolling through and you can't keep up with the comments and likes and shares. I think it got 7,000 shares in like a couple of days.
Jesus.
Like, so we saw this, really just, I couldn't believe it. And then that changed our writing style, because then we realized that that was 12 seconds long and people were still commenting on it going, dude, wait for the end. Jordan, oh my God, this is so you. Like, wait for the end. It's 12 seconds long. So then we realized that people's fucking time on social media is so vital. Like, people just don't want to give up 10 to 15 seconds anymore. So then we started writing really short. And then we had a massive, massive viral hit with What It's Really Like on Ice, or What Are You Doing on Ice, where it was like, it was a parody of the ad where it was like, you know, ice is a terrible drug that fucking takes lives. What are you doing on ice? It was like, fucking heaps of shit. Like, vacuuming the carpet and fucking cleaning the car. And and we fucking loved it and went bananas. And that was the next step. And then we got tired of doing that. And we sat around for a long time as we moved out of that brotherhood fraternity, which was just really a den for drugs and drinking and debauchery. It was a was it?
It was a den
of iniquity. It was not a great place. So we moved out of there and we moved to a nice place in Fitzroy. And Sebby and I were sitting on the couch going, oh, fuck it. Like, what should we do next? Like, film sketches? And I was like, can't be fucked. Like, I just don't want to be doing that shit anymore. And I'd already gotten, you know, tarred with a dark brush. Where he's the drug addict guy. He's the ice guy, you know, or he's the wanker. You know, that's it. That was a meme for a while. And then we decided to do some cartoon stuff. And we haven't looked back.
And what, you know, why cartoons? How did you, because I know that you guys didn't know how to draw, really.
Yeah, I still don't.
Seb doesn't.
Still don't. Yeah.
So Seb taught himself how to do it. So it all started really, well, no, actually that's not true. We did a couple of, you worked out how to make a mouth move.
That was the key.
So it was like, we got the Last Supper as a picture.
Yeah.
And then we did it all, like all the mouths moved. And then we did it as like Jesus was ordering the Palmer. And of course, you're already, what's everyone getting? Fuck it. I'm just going to get the Palmer because it's the safest choice. And then that went viral as well.
Wow.
And then we're like, that's fucking cool and cheap.
Yeah, and cheap and easy.
Thing, we had no fucking money.
Why was it cheap? Because you just literally edited it.
Just download the picture off Google Images and then just put in some mouths. You don't have to hire a camera. You don't have to.
So instead of wasting all this money on cameras and more cameras and props and bullshit, it was my ability to do the voices with Seb's ability to make the mouths move.
And we could write anything we wanted. So there was no restriction.
That's the big point, is that the world opened right up. So film sketch world, it's so hard to do anything.
Because we had the idea for that Jesus sketch. Like we'd had that for years. We're like, oh, we want the Last Supper, but Jesus is just ordering the Palmer. And everyone else is like, oh, I'm going to get the Palmer too. And we're like, you know, you'd have to film it so well. Like you'd have to have the full set deck. It'd have to look like Jesus.
Yeah.
And then we realized one day that like, and we've got a name for it now. We call it a Palmer moment. When we realized like, oh shit, we can just animate it. Like we can do it in a night.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super fascinating. Like I want to get into how this process actually works. Because like I said, I love doing voices. I love like copying. I'm very much an imitator. Here, here's some water. I love imitating shit, like any voice. You know, like Lauren loves the one I do for, what's that? Consuela. Oh, doggy afuera. Doggy afuera. No, no, no.
Is that from Family Guy?
Yeah. No. Superman no here.
Superman no here. Doggy afuera.
But yeah, I just love doing shit like that and ridiculous voices on top of people. I love it, like, because you guys have seen the view from our house, but there's like the walkway to the MCG. And people who like are downstairs, we see them walking past. We love just like mimicking what they're fucking talking about.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's so much fun. So I've been thinking about how this actually works, but I just want to get further into Stepmates itself. So now it's only sketches, yeah? It's only cartoons.
Yeah.
Okay. And so would you say the sort of, I mean, you've had a few different bits like Medic Cheese.
Yeah.
Which is my personal favorite.
Thank you.
Jim's Mowing.
Yeah.
Which has got an interesting story we'll get into. Barefoot Investor is always a good one. Elon Musk thing, but Fighting ISIS, which is what you won this award for, sort of been like, you know, where you said that you want to serve a main meal, so to speak.
Yep.
Is that where you're sort of heading now?
Yeah.
More of that stuff.
So it was more of that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Because like I said, we'd been doing those shorter ones, and the Fighting ISIS was the first idea I think that we'd come up with that had a bit of meat to it. And Sebby and I are both big fans of story writing in terms of the hero's journey and just putting a bit of effort behind it. And Fighting ISIS was one of those cool ideas from our end where it was like bogan Australian men, lowest common denominator stuff, doing big scale Hollywood epics.
Yeah.
And that's what that was the goal with Fighting ISIS. And so that was an 18-month process.
I know.
Is doing fucking Fighting ISIS. And like, you have to believe it. It's going to work.
Yeah.
A lot to do something for 18 months. And you know, it was a good learning experience. But yeah, it's certainly like now we're sort of doing the 5-minute stuff because we realize that 18 months to do one piece of content, or even if it was 5 pieces of content, it's just too long. You can't have that amount of silence.
Yeah.
So we try and do the shorter stuff. We try and we're constantly fucking trying to like
yeah, we're changing all
find
the time.
A state of equilibrium between the short thing? Stuff and the long stuff. Because we naturally want to do the longer stuff.
Mm.
We really we think in 22-minute blocks,
yeah.
Sebi and I. So we try and condense that down to 5. Trying to find that right balance. That's the thing. So I don't know how many people you've probably had on this podcast that's sort of like, yeah, no, I've worked it out. Sebi and I are very happy to say we have no fucking idea.
Yeah.
Well, I think,
and we still don't know.
I think it's tricky. It depends on the situation. Like, I know that, like, this Wednesday I was speaking to Luke Kidgel, part of Luke and Lewis on Fox FM, and he's had a few viral videos. He had, like, one. Have you seen the You Don't Own Me?
Yeah, man? I know the ones, yeah.
Yeah. That combined, he was saying, had 1 billion views.
Yeah, that's
something fucking
that was outrageous.
Ungodly.
That like that crossed cultures, I think that video.
Yeah, that was bizarre. He actually said that it was one, he knows how to sort of structure good memes and make them propagate now, but also the timing. He said that the top, you know, those top 20 sort of meme websites like Unilad, Lab Bible, all that, they all posted it within 48 hours.
Yeah.
And that's what sort of propagated it through
the
ether. Mm. Brown Cardigan, all that sort
of stuff. Yeah, yeah, all the geniuses.
But he's still working it out. He just sort of, yeah.
That's the thing. It's like we worked it out pretty quickly. It's like, all right, not a combined viewership of over 1 billion, but we had some pretty viral hits. That if
who cares, man? A couple. What did you say before? Like 1 million.
Yeah, yeah. Anything above 1 million, you've gone fucking viral, right?
Yeah. It's-
but we realized that no one gives a shit if your stuff's not good. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like the single stuff and the ice stuff. No one looked at that and went, "Fuck, who made this?" Do you know what I mean? Like, let's learn some more about these cunts.
Well,
like,
I did.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Like, you're probably, you know, the one bloke out there that's done it.
I don't know.
No, because we have backed up our stuff as well now. We've got the Fighting ISIS longer thing, and we're doing these shorter, basically short films now.
Hmm.
And I think if we just kept doing the smaller viral stuff, like, yeah, we'd have numbers, but people wouldn't know who we were.
Hmm.
And we wouldn't have...
We also had that thing as well. It's like, the meme stuff, it's pretty easy to write. To be honest, like it's really easy to write if you just keep pitching low, the low hanging fruit. It's really easy so that you can do anything. It's like what it's really like fucking shitting on a door handle. And it'd probably go fucking viral. Do you know what I mean? Like you can do anything.
Yeah, we did a lot of drug content for a while because we found that was going well.
Yeah. What it's like really smoking weed and what it's really like on pills and all this sort of shit. You can do it all.
I think after a while though, it's not about the numbers. Like when you realize, I think when you get a couple and then you're like, okay, well we could keep doing this, but it's sort of just like a drug, like itself. Like it's serotonin, and you get a massive hit out of it when you do it. But then you know a couple of days later, you're like, oh, yeah. Where's that hit?
Totally addicted to likes.
Yeah, exactly.
it's mental. Like that is part of it. Creator addiction to making stuff to go viral.
Yeah.
Is mental.
Well, so would you find yourself an extroverted person?
No, I'm probably introverted.
Okay, so like for you and me as extroverts, it's more so.
Yeah.
It is. That addiction gets more and more intense because you sort of base your personality off being, you know, able to talk to people and being liked and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So
It's about being liked. It's about being liked and popular.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the big one. It's like, fuck yeah, numbers matter.
Yeah.
I can finally put
I can quantify myself.
I can quantify how fucking good I am.
And that's why for people like us, social media is the worst thing. And
it's
that's
awful.
Why I've deleted it.
And I don't use it either though.
Yeah.
Like I find it too much for me. Mm. I don't use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm huge on LinkedIn though. Massive fan of LinkedIn.
Well, I do like this blurb that you had on LinkedIn. It was at least the first paragraph. It was how does it go? The last time I wrote a LinkedIn profile was 6 years ago when I was working in professional legal practice. I remember not quite finishing it, partly because I didn't really know what to say about myself at the time, but mainly because I kept daydreaming about jumping out of the window.
Yeah.
I love that you've got that on LinkedIn.
Is that my opening line? Yeah. Well, it's...
Because people would be like, oh, this is a really, like, you know... Because most of it is like... Jordan is a blubber, like speaking in third person shit, which I
he's
hate.
He's an accredited specialist in fuck knows what, and you know, and he's passionate about who gives a shit.
Yeah. In between word.
CBA, passionate, and and that's true. Like I was legitimately, I remember looking out the window, and I was just at a really small office. It wasn't going to kill me, but I thought, fuck, maybe I'll jump out the window, and I was like, I'll break my legs. So that's giving me 6 weeks off. ah, it's not enough. Like, I'll be... it was like, oh, fuck. I didn't, as you know, the story was, I genuinely wanted to knock myself off at that time.
Yeah.
Like, I did not want to be there at all.
How did you get through that period? Like, because that's... It's pretty fascinating to think that, you know, you are where you are now. You were saying before you were 135 kilos, addicted to drugs.
Yep. Yep.
Suicidal.
In a toxic relationship, suicidal. Yeah, in an awful, awful place. It took a shitload of work.
If you were to give people advice now, looking back in hindsight, what would you say to them if they're in a similar situation?
Start your own stepmates.
Oh, that is too good.
But honestly, it's the only thing.
Find
someone that will do shit for you. It's have something that's bigger than you. Have something that to work towards that's... That gets you going.
Clean your room.
Clean your fucking room. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of micro tips that I can give, like particularly like on weight loss. I talked about it on one of the podcasts a couple of weeks ago. It's like looking at your life in quarters rather than weeks, because weeks is you're only going to fuck yourself up because you'll have a bad week and you'll abandon the whole idea.
Yeah.
So one of the big ones was I started to really treat my life like a business and have like quarterly updates and look at the metrics for the quarter and if I can add way too many quarter pounders this quarter, let's try and reduce that number. Let's sack them. Let's get rid of HR. Like, let's do that and just fiddle with some numbers.
That's so good.
Yeah. So I thought it on quarters, and it's less defeating when you think about it on quarters.
I actually tried that as an exercise, and you know, I wasn't feeling great about the last quarter I'd had, but when I wrote down everything that we'd achieved and everything I'd sort of achieved through work and stuff, I was like, oh my God, I've actually done way more, but I'm just feeling that, like, you know.
Because a week's too short to note down all of your accomplishments.
Yeah.
But it's short enough to be able to pick up all of the bad shit you've done. Well,
the big thing that you've both mentioned there is just that process of writing it down and viewing it from a higher level.
Mm.
You know, we had another guest who spoke about being frustrated with work, and every day he'd come home from work and he'd mark down whether work was a -1, a 0, or a 1. And then he calculated it at the end of like 100 days. And he was like, if it's negative, then I need to stop doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But if it's above 50 or 30 or something like that, then, you know, life's pretty good.
Yeah, right.
And so doing that sort of stuff really gives you context. I know that because I've had pretty bad anxiety for the last 18 months, and little did I know, I've had it for like 4 years.
Yep.
It's mainly triggered by like dietary related stuff, because I've had dietary issues. And just that fact of, you know, journaling once a week, once a day, like even I found if I get like really anxious, just actually talking to myself and, you know, voicing the concerns and realizing how fucking ludicrous it is.
Yeah.
Is super helpful.
Journaling works wonders for me.
Oh, it's amazing.
I can wake up feeling really down, and if I sit down and write for an hour, I can turn it like that.
Yeah, because you just get this shit out of your head.
Yeah.
Because most of it is just the self-talk in your head, I find.
Yeah. It's all about it.
Yeah.
I had to see a psychologist for a couple of years as well, right? Because I think it's kind of like a personal trainer for your brain, which is essentially a fucking muscle, right? So everything else, it's all okay to get a fucking personal trainer to help you get bigger biceps, but it's not okay for a lot of people to go, oh, I've got to go fucking see a psychologist because my brain's a bit fucked up, or it's not as strong as I want it to be, right?
Yeah.
And that was, I had to picture, it was like a little dude in my head with a typewriter that every time you say something like, I'm so shit at basketball, he's fucking typing it away. Or he's like, you made a bad joke last that cocktail party, and he types it away and he fucking files it, and then whenever you say another bad thought, he brings out that folder and just goes, right, here's some more facts that are about the bad things you've said. Do you know what I mean? You're a shit bloke. And I imagined it was like these filing cabinets filled with all of these bad thoughts that after a while it just starts getting established as fact.
Wow.
And that's what it is. It's like my psychologist was really good because I'm a tough bloke to try and break down as well, because I don't believe in the process.
Yeah.
Like, real I didn't believe in it.
Matt Damon in...
In fucking... What's that movie?
Good Will Hunting,
yeah.
It's not your fault.
Yeah, I didn't like it, yeah.
And it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
But she managed to break me down perfectly, where it was just like, you know, she was like, all right, well, what were you thinking at that time? And I was like, here's a good example. It's like, everybody will hate me.
Mm.
And she was like, shut up, bloke. Like, let's look at exactly the fucking metric. Like, look at the words, right? Everybody will hate me. Who's fucking everybody? And I was like, oh, these particular cunts. Like, they'll fucking hate me. She was like, nah, mate, fuck. Not everyone's going to hate you. Some people like Hitler, right? Not everybody can hate you. You'll still find some cunts that'll like you, mate. Like, you're not that special. And that was the other one. It was like breaking me down. It was like, you're not that special, bloke. Like,
wow.
I was like, fuck, that's true.
And so was she very direct, or was she like the calming type?
Nah, she was quite calming, but she had to be direct. So that was the brilliant part of her. She was really calming. So I thought I could walk all over her. And then when she needed to be, she fucking smashed me.
Wow.
Like, I had plenty of times where it was like, ah, nah, I don't believe in that. And she'd just go bang straight at me. Wow. Like, wow, you're fucking right, cunt.
Now, I was thinking before about the gym's mowing thing I mentioned. What happened with that? What can you mention what happened with that?
We can mention everything.
It's a long story. I'd say if you want the full story, head on down to Stepmates Podcast, episode one. It's right there.
Episode one.
We talk about it in that one.
Should we give the cliff notes?
Okay. Well, we made a sketch about gyms.
Gym's gender transitions.
It was fucking great, right? Everyone's made that joke before.
Absolutely
about gyms.
Amazing.
Yeah, and right. I wasn't that proud of it. Like, we're doing this thing like 12 days of content. Like, we were trying to put out a piece of content every day for 12 days. And so this was the sixth day, and we were just running out of ideas. We're like, gyms is funny. We wrote down a massive list of things. We strung them together.
Yep.
And we just put it up.
Who did the voice?
That was Mark.
Yeah, this is me. That's our classic go-to Stepmates voice. He's the... What's the name of your podcast? The Uncommon Podcast.
Uncommon, the Uncommon Podcast!
That's so good.
Yeah. So now you got to start imitating that. You got to start doing it your own.
It's the Uncommon Podcast!
You've nailed it, mate. You fucking know that hard.
All right, Cliff Note version. So that goes nuts. So the next day we get a call from one of Jim's lawyers, and you're probably better to speak to this on.
So Pete, who's at the third part of Stepmates as well. Like, so he's
the composer.
He's the responsible for the sound and music. Okay. Right? He was over in Tasmania at the time, and he got a phone call from Jim's lawyers because he's the only fuckwit that's got his mobile number available online. Seb and I are very fucking careful about that shit, right? So they ended up calling him in Tasmania, and they were like, what the fuck, what's the go with this Jim sketch? Like, Jim's pretty upset about it. And he was like, oh, I don't know, here's Mark's number. So next minute, I'm on the phone to Jim's lawyers. But because of my legal background, I managed to go like, look, my IP law is pretty scratchy because they were really upset that we've misappropriated their logo. And
is it a trademark?
Well, yeah, they're these little head and Jim's mowing, right? But so I was like,
But hang on, that's fair use. It's being
correct, edited. Yeah, right. Well, we don't have fair use here, right? In Australia, even though there's some pretty persuasive precedent here in Australia
but
UK.
YouTube is a .com domain, so it would fall under US IP law, wouldn't it?
Probably not, because it all depends on where you uploaded it from, in terms of what territory you're in.
Okay.
I think that's what my understanding is. However, there's no commercial gain. That was the next point. So she thought she was ringing up some fuckhead, right? She thought she was ringing up some bogan who'd made some sort of cartoon thing, and I managed to bust out this law fuckhead thing. I was like, look, my IP law is pretty scratchy. But I'm pretty certain that we've got some pretty persuasive precedent here in Australia from the UK and from the US that it's not misappropriation of a logo if it's not confusing, deceptive, or misleading for the consumer that it came from the original brand. Isn't that right? And she was
lawyer speak.
There's plenty of other arguments. And I was like, what? Like, so we offered.
But why would they
like,
waste the money?
Yeah, well,
yeah. He had an in-house lawyer.
So, like, he's got in-house lawyers. But we offered to, it was like, look, why don't we just sit down with Jim? Like, let's come together. Let's do another video. You're upset about it. That's cool. Let's get Jim and me next to each other and just go, hey guys, it's Mark here from Stepmates. And this is Jim Penman of Jim's Mowing. Just want to let you know, we did a sketch a couple of weeks ago. Jim no longer does offer the service to eradicate the Jews, but he'll be really happy to fucking mow your lawn. And she was like, I'll take that to him. Like, I'll see what... Like, we'd love to work with you. So we thought we'd fucking won. We were like, fuck yeah, we've got it.
And just an aside, everyone in the office behind her was pissing themselves laughing.
Everyone
like,
was laughing.
She could not, like... She was struggling to keep a straight face at the start.
What does Jim have a problem with? And she was like, well, Jim's... Doesn't really like Jim's racial segregation. And like, everyone in the office...
But the point in the skit is, like, the character just... blinks and goes quiet.
And I was like, we played on this whole manic idea of like this. We dreamt up that it was like, imagine if Jim, the guy with the bucket hat and beard, was just some sort of menace who wanted to turn into some sort of Hitler-like character. Well, we got a phone call like immediately after hanging up from the lawyers, probably 20 minutes after hanging up from the lawyer, the in-house lawyer, from Jim Penman himself.
Wow.
And he was legitimately what we feared, or what we made fun of in the sketch, was the real Jim Penman. Like, he was just a fucking manic, Hitler-style dictator. Like, he's a fucking awful, awful man. So he was like, I will make your lives a living fucking hell. Like, I don't care how much money this will cost me. I will make a fucking... I will make a case out of you guys. Like, I'm doing this out of, like, out of the principle. What did he say? I'm going to make a point out of this.
Yeah, like, I'm going to ruin, like, I'm going to ruin your lives.
We filmed it. We've got the fucking phone call with Jim going like, I don't care. I will sue you. You are fucked. You know, have a real think about it with you and your missus. Like, you will be bankrupt. I will bankrupt you. And we're going like,
but this is the thing is, like, it would work to your advantage because it would come out in the media. These guys don't understand messaging.
Yeah.
This is the thing is, you can't just take someone to court over something as silly as that.
Yeah.
It would come back to haunt him more.
That's what I said. I said it would be pretty funny. Like, he was like, what do you think about getting sued by Jim's? And I was like, well, it'd be pretty funny, to be honest. I think that'll look pretty funny on the project.
So he was trying to anchor on, this is his form of negotiation. He's trying to anchor on scaring you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And his thing was the race. It's like, well, I don't find that funny at all. That's beyond the pale.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, well, what we realize now is that the Jim himself has written a big book called The Hungry Ape, where he characterizes that, like, Aborigines and Jews have a different genetic makeup that have them a different predisposition to working hard and all this sort of stuff. He's invented a pill that makes you smarter and work harder. He's, you know, Jim's wife, she goes, all right.
Yeah.
In the sketch, he doesn't have sex with his wife, believe it or not.
He said in an interview, yeah.
Because he thinks it clouds the brain. The dude is legitimately
a
racist.
What a weird guy.
And we've now heard from people that work at Jim's Mowing and stuff that what he's doing at the moment, and this is going to be kind of complex, but like, he's been offering franchises in the same catchment areas for the same trade. So like Jim's Electrical in Moorabbin. He's been offering another franchise for another Jim's Electrical in Moorabbin for cheaper, 70% cheaper than the other guy paid for it. So now this original guy is 50% of his market is gone because he has to share it with the other Jim's, and the other guy got the fucking franchise for cheaper.
Whoa.
And they're all complaining, going, this is fucking bullshit. So 80% of them voted him out. And then he decided to change the fucking rule book. It was like,
and voted him out, as in
all the franchisees got together and they made a vote and they wanted to get rid of Jim at the helm.
Wow.
Right? And he then went like, all right, we'll take a vote. Fuck, we'll see what it is. 80% of them tried to get rid of him. And then he went, nah, I'm changing the rule. You can't do that anymore.
He changed the constitution.
Much like Hitler did with his Enabling Act, right? Like, so he was devastated at the idea.
What's his name? Like, Jim what?
Jim Penman. Penman.
Get him on the fucking podcast, mate.
No.
Get him on this one. That's an uncommon podcast.
There's a really great Vice article that goes into everything. Some guy.
That pill thing is fucking awful.
Yeah. And he's racist. He's legitimately racist. He's definitely got a messiah-like...
Complex.
He thinks he's above it all, and he genuinely tried to. He didn't care. I told him, mate, we've got nothing. I can show you the fucking stepmate's bank account. It's got $0 in it, bloke.
And then, well, right? he mentioned at some stage that he was just going to drag us. Like, he didn't care if he didn't win. It was more about just ruining us financially.
So he knew it was frivolous. He fucking totally knew it was frivolous. And I was like, mate, that's not gonna be a good look. But we decided to. We actually decided that night, it was like, let's get rid of this. Like, we'll take the sketch down, right? Because Jim's otherwise is going to fucking bankrupt us. Even though I was pretty comfortable to do it. But then we realized that if we took that sketch down and then did an expose video on Jim and told the world how much of a fuckhead he is, take the beard off, take the bucket hat off, show the real Jim Penman. We were going to do like an expose style video that probably would have gone bigger than the original Jim sketch. But he sent us a message the next morning at like 10 o'clock in the morning going like, all right, I'm not suing you. You can keep the sketch. Because I think he realized, because all of it spoke directly to him as if we'd done our research. The man overestimated us. We definitely didn't do any research.
No, it was all accidental.
It was my missus when she was looking up, who's this fucking guy that's trying to sue you? Who's the guy that's going to bankrupt us? What are you talking about? Because I had to have a serious chat with her. I was like, are you willing to be bankrupt for our stupid jokes? And
but hang on, is Stepmates a proprietary limited company?
No, it's a partnership.
Okay.
Yeah.
You should definitely convert that to a proprietary limited company.
Mate, it's like, how much is it? $600?
It's $500. And then $200 a year to do your annual solvency test.
Do our anal
it's probably just
solvency
easier to go
test.
Bankrupt, I think.
Yeah. Can you do it for us?
I'll do it. We should crowdfund that.
Yeah,
we should.
We can crowdfund that.
Let's get
$800.
Let's get a corporate veil on this card.
That's actually, I've been curious about the business model itself. So I know
we've constantly said StepMates is the worst business model.
It doesn't make
but
sense.
But hang on, you said before that cartoons are fascinating because you don't have to spend all this equipment. It's just you and your time.
Yeah.
So all you're paying for is time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've obviously got the cartoons, you've got the Patreon, you've got merch, you've done some branded content.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw the kidney thing.
Yeah,
the spleen thing.
Yeah, that was
spleen.
Fucking funny.
I don't know. Fucking how hard is it to write something about the spleen?
What's the, like, if you look at it into the future, what is the business model? How do you make money from this thing?
Well, we've talked about it a lot. It's like we did a bit of creative work for the betting world. We got dragged in with stepmates with fucking Sportsbet.
Yeah.
At one point, we're doing some work for Sportsbet. We know what it's like, the advertising world, and we fucking hate it. To be honest, I'd rather make fun of advertising and do like these dumb parody videos about how I wish companies could advertise, like kind of like our Dan Murphy sketch. It's like Dan's could never do that version of get fuck-eyed for fuck all.
Get fuck-eyed for fucking fuck all.
Yeah, yeah.
They couldn't do that, but we fucking love that style of advertising, right?
Yeah.
But we fucking hate dealing with clients because clients, they have no idea. Yeah. They have no idea. Yeah. And so it's really hard to like work with those people, right?
Cognitive dissonance.
So we've now, our business model is really like we both have full-time jobs that are in the industry. I'm working in sales and Seb's working as an editor and an animator elsewhere as well. And we work in this industry at different parts, but then come together at doing the thing which is what we want to do, which is narrative content. Mm.
And so the plan is to make longer stuff. We're pitching a pretty cool little six-parter thing at the moment.
We've got a 6x22-minute show.
I mean, like, do you think that it's in TV shows or is it expanding your Patreon audience or is it something else that you think will largely...
So, we're hoping that... Because I think the landscape of the world is changing in that respect as well. TV's fucking dead. I don't really want to be investing too much of my time, resources and hopes and dreams into TV anymore because I think I just don't think it's long for this world really. Our strategy has always been focused on the web because that's where we believe it's going to happen. And Patreon's been great for us in that respect as well, is because we're trying to build that it's almost like a subscription based idea that you pay a little bit of money to your favorite creators and that gives them the opportunity to keep making more. Things like Netflix, if they came knocking, we'd love it. Stan, not sure. maybe. Like, we'd do it for the meme.
Yeah.
We'd do a Stan show for the meme.
I think the plan really is just to do it sort of no matter what. And I guess the more control we have over it, the better. So if we can build out Patreon to the point where we can just produce the show ourselves, that would be really cool.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
You're in a position now, sort of the same with us, like you've got a job that'll sort of support you and then you just keep building and building and building and you know as you build more, you do more, that things will grow to a point where you'll be able to,
do what we want to do.
And I think, you know, I see a feature film maybe around the corner in the next couple of years, like when we'll just be sort of constantly producing that stuff ourselves anyway. So if we can get some money through the door for the narrative stuff we do, like that'd be great. But if not, like, we'll just keep getting it done anyway.
If you had an investor come around and they invested $5,000-$10,000 in this thing, what would you do with it?
Buy some coke. Probably. Like, if I'm being dead honest, that's probably what we do. It's been
$5,000 or $10,000.
$700 on coke initially.
Probably an animator.
Get some Uber Eats. So we'd buy it. We'd buy an animator because that at the moment is the longest part of the process is Sebi physically having to do frame by frame animation on everything.
Yeah.
And drawing all the backgrounds and all that sort of stuff. So, and they'd have to be putting in $100,000 really for us to be able to pump out the stuff because we're not short of ideas, really. Like we've got plenty of them. It's literally just the time. So now we've started to look at our life, going, "Fuck, there's not enough." Like.
How would you make that process of animation easier? Is there any software? Is there any anything, processes that would make that?
It's just a team. It's just more people on it.
Mm.
The Philippines, mate. The fucking offshore animators. Offshore animators. Get that money out of Australia. It's the only way we can do it. So that's that.
Well, it's funny you mention that because that's how we did this stuff is we had freelancers that are based in Europe, got a few in Canada, and then we used that. You know, other people came to us and said, hey, how do you do this podcast video stuff?
Mm.
Oh, hey, we post-production-wise, it's, you know, we hire people. We'll do it for you for 20%.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where the business model came about. But we've thought about animation. I'd love, like, the ideal world for me is to support brands like yours. I don't know what it is, whether it's an online network or something, but just more of this stuff. I just want more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just don't want to have to... Because all I watch is YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And I want to watch more of this shit.
I fucking love
like
YouTube.
People like Michael Cusack is brilliant
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, he's great. He's got a show
killing
now.
It. Yeah.
He's
absolutely
got a show.
Koala, man.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of it yet, but I'm excited to.
And there's not many of us doing animated comedy, really. There's maybe four that I can think of off the top of my head. And Big Les and Cusack's doing well, but Big Les is cooked.
It makes me realize like how much talent there is here in Australia. Much of what we consume is American. And, you know, there's like you said, guys like yourself, Big Les, all those internet comedians here that are doing stand-up. There's just so much here, but, you know, how do you make money from it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And we've decided to go with the complete opposite route, which is like we're clearly not making money off it. So like we pick on brands. No one can support us. Our podcast is filthy. You can't really we can't get sponsors for it because it's too fucked up. Like we talk about really fucked up stuff, but it's what we are naturally inclined to want to do.
Mm.
We want to talk about our dick and balls. We want to talk about like, you know, the worst experience fingering a chick. We want to talk about the worst time we ever took drugs. We want to talk about this stuff, but it's unbrandable.
Yeah.
You can't connect yourself as a reasonable brand. You couldn't do it. Even if you're a brewing company and they'll sponsor fucking anything, like they're still not going to sponsor the Stepmates podcast.
Is there anything similar? Have you found any similar groups in the US that have done stuff like this already?
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is, but we honestly, maybe we're just ignorant. Mm. But we've almost tried to just fucking do our own thing all the time. Like we always just wanted to be, what do you call them? Trailblazers.
Yeah.
Just fucking frontiers in dumb shit. Pioneers in dumb shit. Which is really all we're trying to do is, and our ultimate goal, like if I can tell you, this is, let's peel off the corporate veil of Stepmates for a moment. What we're trying to do is make Australia funny again. Because what is happening in Australia in terms of what's getting picked up by network television is fucking shit. There's so much bad stuff that floats up to the top, you know. And I'm going to use fucking old mate Tom Ballard. I know he's a friend of
mine. I was just thinking of that as well.
Yeah. That sort of, it's just
tonight,
not funny.
Tonight,
it's just not fucking funny.
There was a couple of good sketches.
He's better than that.
I just hate it. It's that left-wing comedy with the forced laugh track. It is the cringiest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we fucking hate it. Like, we don't watch TV, and when we do, we just roll our eyes.
Well, a lot of the comedians we've had on have spoken about this. It's just, it was, you know, the pinnacle of that was... that chick who's associated with the Auntie Donna boys.
Demi Lourdner. Yeah.
Demi Lourdner. And it was like, her bit was like a copy of, you know, their silliness, but her doing her own bits. You know, it was like, oh, have you ever spoken to your dad about your phone or something like that? And it's her just like doing these weird walks that the Auntie Donna boys are just, that to me, every single comedian that's spoken about tonightly has spoken about that, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree.
It's off now, right? They canned it.
Yeah.
They gave it the axe.
Well, it didn't have any, like, views.
Yeah.
Like, look at it on YouTube. No one really engages with that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love that shit. YouTube is the perfect, like...
It's raw. It's
raw.
Honest.
It tells you what's going on.
Yeah.
I love it when brands put up content and then buy shitloads of views. You know, you can tell that, right, by you look at the thumbs up and down because they don't think to buy those.
Yeah.
So you'll go to a page, and I think, you know, CrownBet used to do it, and they'd have like 2 million views on the CrownBet ad and then like one thumbs up. And that's probably, that's the fucking guy that posted it and bought all the views.
And bought God. It's like half of Singapore have watched it.
Or when the comments are disabled. I noticed the ABC now doesn't disable comments.
I hate that. Oh, I love the comment section.
Yeah.
It's delicious. The juice,
that's where you find out what people think.
It's the best. It's the raw stuff.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask you was this creative process.
Mm-hmm.
How does it take us from start to finish What does it look like? And I want you to get really specific.
All right. Okay. So you got to know what you're doing. So we figured out at the moment what we wanted to do was 5-minute episodes with these same recurring characters.
Okay.
So you got to have that. And then, so what we'll do is Mark and I will sit down and we'll just throw a ball around. And we'll just riff, we'll talk, we'll...
Literally throw the ball around.
Yeah.
Like, that goes for like 2 hours.
Mm. And what we're trying to find, I guess, is a concept that's strong enough to hold up for 5 minutes. Or if we're doing a shorter thing, you know, a minute.
And is the concept a punchline, a statement? What is it?
Could be anything, to be honest. Like, it could be as simple as Shannon Noll. And it's like, fuck, yeah. All right, so the boys meet fucking Shannon Noll. And then all the boys steal a lawnmower from Shannon Noll. And then essentially, that once you've gotten that bit, then there's a period of arguing between Sebi and I. So Sebi and I are really good at fucking arguing with each other.
Like, we're good. Like,
our writer's room, and this is because we're now branching off into a new project as well, where we're actually going to bring in some extra writers, some extra friends of ours. And the brief at the moment is, you're going to get your fucking feelings hurt, blokes. Like, you've got to understand that, because Sebi and I are really good at it. We'll say, fuck you, fuck your family, fuck everything about you. You're fundamentally fucked because you don't like my idea.
Yeah.
Or no, that's not fucking funny, you piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, we'll get really angry at each other, but then when the process is over, we still live with each other and we still love each other.
Yeah. It's that middle. We're trying to find the thing in the middle. We're trying to find, you'll disagree with something that I think and I'll disagree with something that you think. And then we'll find this sweet spot in the middle where we both say, oh, actually, that's better than what I thought before.
Yeah.
And that meets all your criteria too.
Because Sebi and I are very different people as well. Like, Sebi's more of the techie. He's younger than me. I've got a bit more of a fuck everyone sort of attitude, where Sebi's a bit more savvy in that respect as well. Sebi's got like a lot of that internet style of comedy, and I've got a very traditional sense of comedy. So that means when we work together and we do find that middle ground, it's actually a little bit more pleasing to both sides of the sides of our market as well. So it's like, and I'm always, you know, Seb's always looking for something a little bit more, what would you say? It's like higher concept in terms of story. And I'm always looking for something a little higher concept in terms of argument. Do you know what I mean? Or in terms of message.
Okay.
So even something really dumb, we try and find a good way to elevate that message, but also portray it in a way that makes sense in terms of narrative, in terms of story.
Yeah. So then from there we think of the structure really. So if we got 5 minutes, that's about 4 or 5 scenes. So we try and figure out what the scenes are, how they start, how they end, and how they tie to the one before it and the one after it.
So like a storyboard.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Not quite a storyboard, more like a really rough, so like just a description of a scene. So it's like, Toby's in class, his teacher's doing this, but he's got a crush on this girl, and you know, it's setting up for this next scene.
Yeah.
And
then we'll go into fish fingers. And then like we often, this is a big one that we try and do now as well, is the tie-ins between scenes. So this scene ends with this line or with this image, and then the next scene has to connect in a funny way so that they're either polar opposites in terms of like, that'll never fucking happen. Oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what we'll try and do.
One of my favorite examples of that was in Fighting ISIS, when Gav's giving a big speech to the boys as they're crossing the desert. And he's like, boys, we're going to be heroes back home. I swear to God, like they're gonna think we're heroes. And it cuts to a news report, and the news report's like, traitors.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the good shit. Like, that's a great cut.
So we try and write with that always in mind.
Right.
And because I think Seb does all, because he does all the drawing, we often talk about that in the writer's room. We talk about what that'll look like and what action's going on, and then we cut to this and all that sort of stuff. So we're both sort of thinking in those terms. I guess we're storyboarding at the same time.
And I think that it helped we start with live action as well, because we got very much, it's like putting a camera in the room and like it's three-dimensional and we're thinking what you cut to. It's not just sort of side by side.
Yeah, I reckon that's true. Yeah, because we often talk about, so we're over the shoulder there, or like we're shooting this way and all that sort of stuff. Like, we do talk in those terms, even though it's still with animation.
Wow.
Which is really weird.
And so from there, is that when you start drawing?
So when we, no. Oh, maybe.
I should. You fucking should.
I should. Well, the early we, like if we know that a scene's going to be in there, like I'll start drawing it. But the problem with that is, and we had this sort of with the last one, is we realized that there was a scene that we could have cut out and it would have still worked, but I'd already drawn all of it. So it was like, I've got to really know exactly what's there. So when we lock down the structure, then we'll go to scripting. And still, even then, it's not really locked in, because we'll realize that like when characters are talking to each other, I'm like, okay, that doesn't work, or this needs to go over here, or we need, like, they just wouldn't talk like that. Like,
we're also, to be honest, like we are both, Sebby and I both tend towards the laziness of things as well. So if, once we've cracked a story, we definitely go, fucking beautiful. Like, stop throwing the ball. Let's just chill out. And then we'll just sit there and talk about it more generally. But that focused session where you're trying to pick holes and trying to argue and trying to find the right bit, we give up on that pretty quickly once we've got it.
Mm. Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So when we go into that scripting phase, which is often where Seb or I will write a skeleton script and with like dialogue that you sort of just smash together, then we come back together and we fight about that, about what the actual dialogue is, and then we have massive blues about that, about what the next step is, and then we refine, and that's probably, there's probably about three goes at it.
Yeah.
So one of us will write one version, the other one will go, no, that's fucking shit, you're shit, I'll rewrite it.
Yeah.
And then we rewrite it. And then we come together with two versions of the same fucking script,
yeah,
essentially, and try and merge them together. And that's probably what the ultimate one looks like.
And then
like.
We haven't even started on the voices yet. So then...
Man, there's the voices.
There's the voices.
Because I have a tendency to want to improv a lot as well. But we're often at that point, week four of a monthly schedule at the start of... And Sebby hasn't started drawing yet. So we're getting in the room trying to do the voices and we want to have an improv, but we're also under enormous time pressure.
Yeah.
So it's like there's no fucking room for improv anymore. But so we end up doing the script and we end up getting some jokes in there that are just sort of improv. But it does. It keeps me contained a little bit because I could improv all day.
Do you record the voices before you do the cartoons? Yeah. Or do you dub it over?
No, I do it and I cut to it. So we record the voices first.
Yeah, you got to do the voices first. It's not like Mrs. Doubtfire.
How does the actual like cartoon... Because I was looking at this last night and the last few days on YouTube about how these cartoons are actually made.
Yeah.
Like the Big Les show and all that. So they do theirs on like MS Paint.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah. That's so dumb.
Which is nuts.
It's beautiful. It's amazing that he's managed that.
But so you draw on paper, then you'd scan it onto After Effects?
I just draw straight into Photoshop and then I sort of rig the characters up so that I can use them over and over again. So it's not technically frame by frame. It's sort of meant to look like that, but it's not. So what I'll do is I'll draw, say, Gav, and then I'll draw 12 of his mounts, and then I'll bring that into After Effects. And then now that that's in After Effects, I can use those 12 mounts forever. Uh-huh. And then, so the idea was that we could build these characters out, and like the more actions that they have,
the more you could do.
And then you could keep building on it.
We're big fans of leverage.
See, this is what I mean, is like if you had that money, it would make more sense to get the animators to draw these little components.
So
then you could build this sort of inventory of stuff.
That's the plan. Right. We're sort of putting that into our pitch we're doing at the moment for these six episodes. This is how we'll build out the animation. And we had a mate, it was like the economy of scale or the scale, the economy is a scale. I don't know what it is.
The economy of scale.
The economy of scale.
So it gets cheaper. So the first episode might cost you 30, 50 grand, but then every episode after that only costs 10.
Right.
So there's a longevity to, if you build us the assets, we can keep making this thing for fucking cheap.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like really building a, yeah, like a sitcom set really.
So
like,
what are these six episodes? What can you say?
We don't know yet. No. So we had a chat with, we can give you their job titles anyway. So one's like,
head of comedy
and the other one was programming director at a particular network and they gave us a buzz and we did our classic fuck around anyway, making some jokes, had a bit of a laugh, and they were like, they came back to us and said, look, give us 6 by 22 minutes as a proposal, which is what I do for work anyway, which is make proposals and sell. So that's what we're going to do. So we just told them over summer, Sebby and I'll hit the boardroom and we'll do some writing and we'll get a proposal together. I also told him we're going to drop some acid.
You did?
And, yeah.
At the end of the phone call. It was the funniest thing I've ever heard.
It was one of those right on the edge of your seat sort of moments. And it was like, no worries, boys. Well, look, me and Sebby will hit the writer's room, mate. We'll get these six episodes together. We'll get some metrics for you to talk about how much is this all going to cost. We'll also drop some acid. It was also one of those, like, don't do too much acid, boys. It's just to let them know that we don't quite give a fuck.
That's so funny.
So it's all power play, really.
And the characters, like where do these characters come from? Is it just everyday life? You know, where's Toby come from? Where does fucking, what's the dad's name again?
Gav. Gav's sort of like just our dad.
Gav, yeah, Gav is at both of our dads put together, essentially.
Like, yeah.
Classic. Oh, Mr. Gibb.
Yeah.
Mr. Gibbon. Oh, Mr. Gibbon.
Yeah. So Gav is, yeah, he's sort of an amalgamation of both of our dads. And like my dad in particular was like, he was one of those kids, one of those dads when I came home and was like, hey, Dad, like, it's really unfair that like the Aboriginals like don't have their land anymore. And he'd be the sort of bloke to go, like, what are you fucking talking about, mate? Mate, we had the fucking Coliseum and these cunts fucking still clacking sticks around a fire. Like, all this sort of shit. We'd build the wheel. What the fuck? And it was one of those. And I always just found it so hilarious. So my dad's quite right-wing leaning anyway.
Yeah.
And I've always grown up, you know, like...
Right-wing or just conservative?
Pretty conservative, yeah. Probably not far right-wing. Like, my old man was Adolf Hitler. But, like, no, so he's always been like that. I think your dad was the same, wasn't he?
He was very
like,
similar, yeah.
They were just sort of like the classic...
Politically incorrect dad.
Yeah.
You know?
Just the big Y chromosomes as well. Back when that wasn't such a bad thing
yeah,
in the world,
my,
do you know what I mean?
My dad's the same.
Yeah.
And I kind of respected it in a weird way. This weird, like... macho masculinity thing. Like,
yeah.
It's so weird, but I do sort of have a bit of respect for it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just, nah, fuck that cunt. And if he's got a problem, I'll smash him.
Yeah.
You can't do that now. Do you know what I mean? And we found it really fun playing on that side of the road now, because there's too much of the ballards of the world that are doing all the stuff on the left-hand side and making fun of it. It's like, oh, let's make fun of Trump. Yeah, that's fucking real ingenious. Yeah.
Orange man.
Orange man bad. I love that meme so much.
But it's so true, though, because I going back to our chat before about the Seinfeld thing, it's all these kids, it's like they're programmed to just like, this thing, this is what I say. This thing, this is what I say.
Yep.
It's fun. There's fun nuance. It's fun to make fun of
like,
it.
Like a good example is actually on the more far right as well. They do it as well. It's like the liberal media. It's not the media or the mainstream media. It's now just the liberal
media.
Yeah,
the liberal media,
Which, yes, it is more liberal leaning, but you just, why do you have to insert that in?
Mm.
This is like, that's your little script. Mm. You've got to say
that. You've got to say it. And both sides are really bad at it. So Sebby and I both, we've talked about this before, about where we sort of sit on the spectrum. You know, don't let the man bun and the beard and all that sort of shit, you know, deceive you too much. Because we're both centralists.
Yeah, same. I think most people we speak to are.
Yeah.
I think we've got similar viewpoints.
Yeah.
And I just think that's where really find the right funny. I find it so funny.
Yeah.
It's some of the argument that it's like, nah, keep it how it is. Like, I love that. I love it. I love how it's presented. And I love the way the left want to do it in a weird way where they get a picket fence and they fucking, you know, they're holding signs. And it's like both far right sides of the argument do things in stupid ways in terms of trying to convince the other. It's so polar, and I fucking love it. And I love sitting in the middle. And a lot of people didn't know with fighting ISIS, like, which way we leaned on it. Are they being racist or are they being multicultural? I don't know what it is.
And
like,
the answer is a little bit of both.
And it was both. Because we're dead set centralists.
Yeah.
We caused a big fight. Because we got admitted into the Berlin Webfest with Fighting ISIS, and there was a Palestinian lady on the judging panel, and one of our mates happened to be on the judging panel as well. It was like a big Skype call, and she was furious.
About what?
About the fact that she was like, this not only should not win the award, it should never have been accepted into the festival.
Why?
All this sort of things. Well, because that was horrifically offensive.
Yeah.
But because that's what art and comedy and all that.
I know.
That's the only way. And that's the only measure that I can ever respond to these things as, unless it's through our cartoon.
And it's so, because the idea.
So defeating.
The idea of it was to start them off as racist characters and then they learn the error of their ways and they become more accepting of other cultures. But you can't have them learn the lesson if they weren't flawed in the first place.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to show them flawed.
Yep.
It's a natural part of, like, you guys love that story arc that you said before, the understanding of structure of stories. Like, I think, I don't know if you guys have seen Myths and Beasts.
Oh, no, I want to watch that. No,
that's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's basically the different types of stories we've had through different societies and how they're structured.
Right.
And so I think that understanding of it is obvious with what you guys bring to the stuff that you do.
Yeah.
I think that is important. That vulnerability is so important.
Yeah. Hero with a Thousand Faces. That's a good book.
Exactly. I think that's one of the books that's referenced in that doco.
Yeah.
I'll have a squeeze.
Yeah, I need to watch
really
that.
Fucking good.
Yeah.
It's maybe like a six-part series. Okay. And so the drawing, would you say you're a good drawer?
No. I this is 2019 is my year to get better at drawing. I'm going to start putting in some time.
And so all that stuff is done in After Effects, yeah?
Photoshop into After Effects, yeah.
Okay.
But it's a lot of... The good thing about drawing on a computer is there's an undo button. Mm. So you can always... You can just keep doing it until it's right.
Because I want to have a bit of fun with it. Like I said, I love doing voices and doing all that sort of stuff. It's just fun.
You should do it, man.
Teach yourself how to lip sync. That's the key. Or that was the key for me. Is it like when you learn the mechanics of how to lip sync a character, you're like, oh, okay, I can do that with arms.
Yeah.
Or I can do that with anything.
Yeah. That's where it all started for him anyway.
Yeah.
He made the Last Supper talk, and then he just started to start doing it with like Vegemite jars. He was like, if I put a mouth on a Vegemite jar.
That's what I do is I do that, like putting voices over other people. So
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Mate, do it. All you got to do is put 12 mouths and learn how to fucking make a move. Like, it's not that simple, man.
Yeah.
No.
Seems like it's there, right?
No, it is. No,
he's a good tracer too, old Sebby.
I do a lot of tracing.
But you get upset about this, but I like that you trace it. Because then it's like, it's fucking legit, like, and it's good. And it's still yours. Like, I still think you're still creating something new. The fucking document was blank before you did it.
I'm going to get sued.
Not going to get sued.
When it comes to the sort of leaders in cartoons, comedy, you know, if you were to think about who they are, who really inspires you guys?
South Park, Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty, yeah.
Fucking amazing. Yeah, Rick and Morty was the reason why I got excited about cartoons.
Really. Yeah.
It wasn't even South Park. South Park, I loved it, but I was like, they're in a fucking league of their own.
Yeah.
When I first saw Rick and Morty. So here's a story about when we first watched Rick and Morty. We had a shoot scheduled for the next day. It was like a 6 a.m. shoot as well. Like it was our own sketch that we were going to shoot. And we sat down and said, it was like, I was going to chuck this one episode of Rick and Morty on. And it was
just
6
show.
O'clock at night. Somewhere I was like, yeah, sure.
Like, no, it was later. It was like 10. It was like 9 or 10 maybe.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, somewhere it was nighttime.
Yeah.
We'll agree on that. Yeah. It was nighttime. And Sebby's like, we'll put one episode on and then we're going to get to bed because we've got to do it. We ended up watching the entire first season in one go.
Wow.
It was something like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning and we went to bed and we cancelled the shoot. We were like, nah, this is more important to our professional development than what this shoot will be tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, that's how much we loved it.
I don't know. It was a dumb sketch
it
for
would have
mine.
Been a fucking dumb sketch.
But I just had never laughed so hard. And I remember at the end of each episode, we're like, all right, let's watch one more. And then we just slowly sort of started negotiating. We're like, this is way too good. Like, we can't.
It's too important for us to watch this now. Like, we cannot do this shoot tomorrow. That's how, like, we stopped doing work to watch it.
Wow.
And so that, undoubtedly.
And so there's no other, like, major cartoons that.
I really like the old, like, Disney, like, Aladdin.
Oh, that's some shit, yeah.
Hmm.
But those are the two.
Big Les was a pretty big inspo as well for us, I reckon, when it first came out, because we saw that it could be done. Like, these guys that were doing it on MS Paint, like, we saw that it was like, fuck, that's interesting that you can tell story when it's so shittily done. Mm. Like, the actual animation doesn't need to be that good. Mm. You can get away with a lot of it. And it was like, it was probably putting those two things together as well. It's like that lowest common denominator, which we fucking love doing anyway. But with Big Les, we were like, maybe we can put some sort of, you know,
spin on
higher
it.
Concept
yeah.
in and around it and do something kind of nice.
Yeah, Big Les is like, yeah, mate, no, yeah, Nangs.
Yeah,
no, yeah, Nangs, yeah. But it's brilliant. I love that shit.
And then, the views,
yeah.
fucking sky high.
How do they make money?
They don't, because they're cooked. Like,
but is it like, is it the Patreon thing as well?
Well, yeah, I guess.
No, he's very humble about it. He gets, I think he's got. Like a $1 Patreon tier, and
he must make a fair bit of coin.
$500 or so.
Because that shit was out of control. Like, I can't even remember how many subscribers they've got.
Oh, it was ridiculous, man. They could have done a lot more to commercialize it, I think. But he's still making it. Like, they're still big. I think the finale's coming.
Yeah, right.
In January, and then he's going to go show it in cinemas as well, which is really clever.
That's clever.
Yeah, I saw. That's what the events tour that they're doing is like a pre-show. You know, before it's released on YouTube.
It's really, they should have been doing that a long time ago. But
All right, we're going to jump into some short, fast questions to finish you blokes off.
Quick fire rounds! Fast!
Sorry, we do a lot of segments.
Fast questions!
All right, first one. What's your morning routine look like?
Sebby has a flog.
Yeah, have a flog now. That's not November. My usual routine, I've fallen out of sorts in the last couple of weeks. My usual routine is get up at 5 o'clock, read for half an hour.
Wow.
Work for 2 or 3 hours before work, and then and then go to work and then sort of come home and do what we need to do.
Wow.
Yeah, I just had a crisis because I've been working full time and trying to do this shit on the side as well. And I was like, I'm not getting any of my life anymore.
Yeah.
So I front load my day now. So I get up at 5 as well. Between 5 and 5.30 is time for a coffee and just wake up time. And then 5.30 to 6, 6.30-ish is go for a run because that helps me a heap. It's almost like my morning meditate is going for a run. Shower, come back, do some writing. Get ready for work, and then off I go to work, and we both leave together at 8:15. Wow. I drop Sebby off at the MCG or at Richmond Station, and he goes off to work. I go off to work, and then night times is our own. Like,
right.
And so we often come back together anyway and do shit.
Yeah.
We can't really help it.
Might have a podcast or...
We might do a podcast or something like that.
And the podcast is recorded once a week, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every week, because we're not smart like you, Jordan, where we have some in the fucking bank. Like, we're literally chasing our tail constantly.
We record them and we put them out within 24 hours.
It's hard though. What you guys are doing is exceptionally hard. You know, we work up to that bank, you know, and the thing is, we've also got people that are helping us on the side.
Yeah,
it's really hard. So, I can see how the time goes. Like, you guys would spend most of your Saturday, Sunday. Working, right?
Yeah, and much to my fucking disgust, to be honest. I get fucking furious. Yeah, man. Like,
your girlfriend was having a crack at you today for doing it too much.
Yeah,
Do you have like a day? Like, I try and take most of the most of the day off on Sunday.
I try to, but now it's like just trying to squeeze in other shit. Like, I got to go to the shops.
My procrastination sort of forces me to sometimes. Mm. Like when it peeks its head through, I might spend a day on the couch just playing some Nintendo or something.
But yeah,
I'm also such a piece of shit that I'll do is like, I will snap at the smallest of things when it's inconvenient for me. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'll go through plenty of shit. Like, we'll do podcasts when I'm hungover. I'll push my way through that. I'll do writing sessions when I don't feel like it. But then if I come home and Seb might just go like, hey man, just wanted to quickly run over something with you. I'll be like, fuck off. Like, I'm fucking working full time. Can't I got no fucking life anymore? And I'll just crack it. Just go, you fucking fundamentally flawed. Get the fuck out of my life. And then, you know, we'll end up talking about the metrics and we'll get it done.
You should look at your grocer. You'd like that. If groceries is a problem. We automate most of that stuff away now. Like, we use your grocer. It's free delivery. You pay like $17 a month.
Yeah, right.
So all your groceries just come through that.
So yeah. My girlfriend and I, we like shopping together because we're now financially stable.
Okay.
And she, when we first started dating, it was a lot of that fucking tap the card, hoping that it went through. Do you know what I mean? Now that we have joint accounts, we actually enjoy the process of going to shop.
Okay.
And we do like a big weekly shop.
Wow.
And we cook Sebby cooks 2 nights a week and we cook for the other 5. And then we all come together.
There you go.
Bill, I like the shop. I like going to the shops. So
how do you guys decompress at night then? You mentioned gaming a few times. What else is there? Netflix?
Yeah, YouTube. I end up sitting on YouTube. And one of my hobbies, and I've worked this out probably more recently as well, is I really enjoy learning. Not to the place where I'm good at anything. It's just until I'm passable at it. Mm. So, and that's what I like to do. I'm not a huge reader, but only because I read so much at law school. But I love fucking jumping on YouTube and just looking up random shit that I don't know about. Mm. Cooking. All that sort of stuff.
Yeah. TVs. I've started watching a couple more TV shows now too, which has been good.
Yeah. I need to watch more movies because going through high school and then into uni straight away, I missed a lot of movie time.
Mm.
You know, I was like a really studious kid in high school as well. Like, I'd fucking work really hard.
Lord of the Rings, mate.
Yeah.
Fuck the Lord of the Rings, you cunts.
Just get through it, dude. I'm telling you, you'll love it. You'll absolutely love it.
Yeah. That's how I got sold on Coke. So let's do it. Yeah.
All right. Best purchase under $200.
Fuck. There's not much that I've enjoyed under $200. My micro grader, my micro plane. The micro plane's a fucking good buy. SodaStream, that's a good buy. My blender, no, that was $400. Oops. It's a good blender.
Is this one of those fucking? I think we've got it at home.
Like a Nutribullet?
Nutribullet.
No, mate.
Yeah.
That's an Omni blender. Thanks again to Omni Blend for sponsoring the show. Thanks for sponsoring the Uncommon Podcast.
I bought these shoes I'm pretty chuffed with. They're like sort of cyclist shoes, but they've got like a front.
They are fucking awful.
My shoes, I know, they don't look great, but they are so comfortable, and my shoes always get holes in them. Every pair of shoes I've bought.
Interesting. How much are these shoes?
With my feet. They're like $100.
Okay.
$100.
Last question for you guys. If you could have a billboard anywhere, where would it be and what would it say?
It'd be above Mark's bed and say, go fuck yourself. That's all I got.
Where would you put it? Maybe coming out of the Melbourne airport on the Calder Freeway there, and it's just an ad for Stepmates and just says, you wouldn't like it.
Times Square. Let's go Times Square.
Fucking Times Square. You probably wouldn't like this.
You wouldn't like this. Yeah.
Just be really honest about the advertising as well.
That's so good.
Yeah, out the front of Jim's joint.
Yeah, Jim's bed.
Fuck you, sue me.
Yeah.
All right, guys, look, it's been a pleasure having you here. We've clocked well over an hour and 40 minutes, I think.
Nice.
Wow,
that fucking flew.
I know.
Holy shit. How was the experience for you?
It was fantastic.
Was it better than Jeff Kennett?
Yes.
Fuck.
You know, I got to tell you, when I went to see him, I went in there and he's like, who are you? I was like, I'm the podcast man. I'm here to do an interview. He's like, what podcast? Through your PR lady. I don't have a PR lady. For your book. I don't have a book.
And then, nothing but barriers.
And then I'm standing there like, what do I say? I said, well, what do you mean? And he's like, oh, well, you're here now, so let's do it.
Unbelievable.
What a legend.
That's a good impression of Jeff Kennett, by the way. We should get you on the fucking on the show.
Mate, I'd be happy to.
Can we use that as a tagline for ourselves now in the future as well? Better than Jeff Kennett?
Yeah, better than Jeff Kennett. Official. Jordan Michael Lee.
Creating animated chaos. Better than Jeff Kennett.
That's it. Well, thanks for getting in touch.
No worries.
Appreciate it. No one really gives a fuck about us most of the time, so it's really nice that you invited us on your podcast.
I think a lot of the other comedians on the internet love what you guys do. I think it's very funny. I think it would be great to have you back, and we should definitely introduce you to some of those guys. I don't know if you know them, like Lewis Spears, Neil Hatcock, Friendly Geordies.
Yeah.
I think you'd riff off some great ideas.
Yeah, we'd love to. We're opening ourselves up to collaboration, including with your fine self, mate. we did look at the list of people that you've had on before.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, fuck, he's scraping the bottom of the barrel. This bloke, and fuck, now
he's like, running out.
He's got none left.
mate, we're booked out till fucking start of March.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
great.
I remember when we got the fucking calendar invite for you. It was like, do you want to do a podcast? And it was like, yeah, we can do 2 p.m. on Wednesdays and Saturdays. How's the 15th of December or something? I'm like, get fucked. Yeah. Who's this bloke? It's like 4 months away, you fucking goon. Jesus Christ.
Was it that far ahead?
It was fucking 4 months.
It was like, no, it was about, I think it was 2 months. I think it was 2 months.
So how's this bloke booking out in December already?
Oh, man. It's true, though. If I look at it, I think we're booked up to the 20th of Feb.
So. Oh, that's good shit.
Mental.
I think we're doing a podcast for ourselves next week, maybe. I don't know.
I still had Easter eggs, and this bloke's booking me out for Christmas. It was fucked.
Look, thanks for coming on, guys. It's been great.
Thanks for
having us. Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you for making it this far. Before you run off, we have a quick ask for you. Subscribe on your podcast app. Subscribing will give you priority access and help your fellow-minded listeners find Uncommon. Or you could also share with a friend. This will go a long way in building our audience, which will help us both get further guests on the show. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube by searching Neural, which is NEURAWLE. But until next time, thanks for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Neural Media is an effortless and affordable content production service. We help businesses save time and money by taking away the pain of producing content. If you want to grow your audience through content production, head to neural.com/media. That's NEURALE.com/media. Create a quote and request a callback from me personally. If you want to learn more about the benefits of growing your audience, download our free series on how to create content at the bottom of neural.com/media. Listeners to this podcast receive a special 10% discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON.